Well, good morning, everybody. I almost feel compelled to say yee-haw or something like that. I don't know what. Well, thank you very much for the introduction, Susan. And I want to thank NFAC for the opportunity to be here today and talk to you about benchmarking. Unlike Anne Marie, who decided to speak about things she knows very well, I decided to speak about things which I know less about, but I think are incredibly important and interesting for the agriculture community in Canada to consider. I think what you'll find today in my presentation is a number of themes that maybe you heard yesterday, and I hope by the end you appreciate the importance of data and establishing baselines and conducting benchmarking. As I go through my presentation, and maybe as a follow-up to some of the questions you heard that were asked after the first presentation, I want you to think about maybe what Robin Horrell said yesterday about we need to debunk the myth that farmers don't care about their animals. And from Catherine Scoville's presentation about allowing producers to speak with confidence. Ask the question, how? How will we do this? I think we know there's lots of things to be done, but the question really is, how do we move forward? And I hope that benchmarking is one of the ways that we can actually do that. So when asked to speak about benchmarking, I thought, wow, what a great opportunity to talk about something novel and different and exciting and new things that are happening. So back in the fourth year century, we started talking about benchmarking already. You, Socrates, have discovered the reason why some farmers are so successful. The husbandry yields them all they need in abundance, and others so inefficient that they find farming unprofitable. I should like to hear the reasons in each case in order that we may do what is good and avoid what is harmful. Xenophon, 4th century. So it wasn't nearly as new and exciting as I thought it was going to be. Okay, but I think it still is extremely important, but more importantly maybe, is that it demonstrates how important this action of benchmarking, of understanding what works, what doesn't work, is in agriculture, how it's really part of your tradition in terms of continuous improvement and moving forward. So what is benchmarking? Well, benchmarking, in a recent book on benchmarking in agriculture, which really focuses more on the business aspects than the on-farm aspects, it was a very broad definition that was given that covers any activity where owners and managers compare their practices and performance with someone else's and make changes intended to result in improvement of both. That is very different than setting baselines, and so we tend to use the language of benchmark. Well, we're going to set a benchmark. Really what we're doing in many of those cases is establishing baselines. Benchmarking is the next step where you do the comparative analysis. But I, like all, will probably use those interchangeably. In fact, there are a couple of different types of benchmarking that are actually there. There's even a whole journal on benchmarking alone. And the two types of general categories are best practice benchmarking and benchmarks for performance analysis. One is about establishing what is the best practice. The other is about establishing or setting benchmarks for the analysis. So where do you set the level and how you set the level? When we talk about best practice benchmarking in a general business sense, because businesses do this all the time, it's a systematic approach where they evaluate their operations and procedures through a detailed comparison with those of another business and try to establish the best practices to improve their performance. Okay. What does that involve? That involves mass participation, large data sets, often involving financial accounting information, the production of baselines and subsequent benchmarks, and detailed analysis of the processes within a particular business. Okay. It's used to diagnose problems and help with business planning. When we benchmark, we end up with a reference point for a standard that can be used to judge against. Okay? The pool data. This is something that has happened a great deal in agriculture. People going and talking about what's the production on this farm versus another farm. Farm tours, understanding how people are doing different things. Okay? It's often referred to as comparative analysis. So taking a benchmark on lameness for examples and unicorns, because I don't want to pick on any particular industry, and comparing it to other unicorn farmers is really a comparative analysis. Now, the comparative analysis approach is something that really kind of fell out of favor a few years ago. And the reason was because what Anne-Marie was actually getting at in terms of the complexity of the cluster project and identifying links. The comparative analysis approach, where you simply say, lameness on unicorn farm X is this, and lameness on unicorn farm Y is this, and do that comparative, doesn't really help you move forward in terms of establishing the causes behind it, the financial changes that need to be made, is it worthwhile, those types of more complex questions. It simply is a comparative approach, and it doesn't really provide a lot of information about how to manage it better. In agriculture, it's a little bit different. I actually think it's quite a bit different than the large business approach. The goals, I think, are quite similar, whether you're benchmarking for animal welfare or benchmarking for your entire practice, and I would actually argue that benchmarking for your entire organization, your entire farm, taking into account welfare and financial aspects and environmental issues and biosecurity issues, that those are the ways we need to move forward in terms of developing on-farm assessments, because simply doing one in isolation really ignores a lot of the other issues that are important and are all interrelated. One of the things that's really quite different is that benchmarking on farms often involves small family-owned businesses, right? They may not have all those records you may want to have. They may have a record-keeping system. Some of them may use it. Others may not have any records whatsoever. They may not be all that willing to share financial information. Okay? There's a lot of challenges when you're dealing with a small family-owned operation. They're also much more immediately responsible for a number of issues. In large corporations, you will have, you know, an area that worries about producer safety or worker safety and people who worry about other aspects of the business and large departments that do that. On a family farm, you end up with the family being responsible for all those things and immediately responsible. Responsible for producing the food and fiber, responsible for making a livelihood, worrying about the environment and making those standards, worried about the safety of the people they employ, worried about addressing animal welfare issues. Now, you may argue that producers have always worried about animal welfare and always have had their own benchmarks about animal welfare. The classic, and I think we heard it yesterday when talking about the husbandry ethic or the idea that, you know, I look after the animals and they look after me. The animals are producing well, growing well. That's a pretty good indicator that we're doing the right thing. But I don't think that works anymore. And I know Jeff Rushen is going to talk about different perceptions of animal welfare, talk about feelings and functioning and natural behavior maybe in his presentation. And for historically, people have been quite happy to think about functioning aspects of animal, of raising animals, about the health and productivity of animals. But I think that has really shifted. I think there's a huge shift occurring from the functioning approach to worrying much more about animal emotions, worrying about whether the animals are able to perform natural behavior. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed if these approaches are going to be sustainable in the long run with the public. If the public has moved from focusing only on health and productivity to now worried much more about other components of animal welfare, the programs that are developed need to take that into account. Because I think the retailers, the consumers, are going to expect that to be the case. You even see it in science. We have a shift in terms of classic definitions of animal welfare by Broom, the state of the animal with its attempt to cope to the environment, which really focuses quite a bit more on functioning than other aspects of animal welfare. Ian Duncan's definitions dealing with the feelings of animals, to now I know Jeff's going to mention the OIE and the definition there, but where animal welfare refers to the state of the animal. And the treatment is now referred to dealing with animal care. That creates a huge shift in terms of what we're going to measure, what we're going to assess. If we're going to assess animal welfare, we need to be assessing the state of the animal. Okay? Not alone, but it's going to be, that's a significant change, and I'm not sure we have all the tools we need to make that happen just yet, but I'll let Jeff deal with that. It has an impact on what to measure, right? Are they resource-based engineering standard, animal-based standards? What are the variables that need to be part of the assessment procedure to accurately assess animal welfare in a way that works with the public? When it comes to animal welfare and benchmarking, I think that it's really still in its infancy. It's really just beginning. Organizations like we saw yesterday in Catherine's talk are moving forward and making great strides in terms of developing ways of doing on-farm assessments. I'll argue just for today or suggest for today that there's three major types of benchmarking activities. There's probably more, and don't want to argue the point, but one would be establishing benchmarks for what's happening in the industry. The second would be comparing that comparative analysis with feedback to producers. And the third would be assessments and audits to some sort of animal welfare standard, whether that be for different types of reasons. When it comes to the first one, we're establishing benchmarks for what's happening in industry. Those are some of the things you heard about earlier yesterday and from Anne-Marie's talk this morning. You know, the prevalence of certain problems, of illness, of lameness. We have projects going on in Alberta. I have a PhD student working on transportation, and she's looking at environmental conditions within transport trailers, and that involves knowing how many animals are on trucks, how far they actually go, getting some of that real baseline information. Okay. And it is baseline information. And from that baseline information, we should be able to establish what would be acceptable in terms of actually a numeric average or however we want to set those benchmark standards. There is a limitation to this approach. Although the information is important, it's awfully very focused on specific issues. Right? Very focused on the question of the lameness of unicorns, the distance the truck travels. Right? It doesn't often include that economic analysis that helps producers decide, what can I actually do to fix these problems? Or how should I go about fixing these problems? Right? That's where it's so important to develop those links among all the different variables to help understand what's the strategy for addressing this problem, this issue, what's the most efficient economic way of addressing this issue, because every farmer is going to be different. The same solution isn't going to work the same way for each producer. Farms are managed differently, they're designed differently. Okay. The baseline data right now is being used to establish kind of benchmarks and goals. And it's rather unclear how that happens without additional information and additional analysis. It's the best we can do, and as I said, at this point, we really are in our infancy in terms of using this information. So for example, what do I mean by that? Well, it may be that we do the baseline study and we find out that 30% of all unicorns on farms are actually lame. Is that good? Is that bad? Is that acceptable? Should we set the mark? If we have a few farms that are at 10%, should we set the benchmark at 10%? How do we make those decisions? Perhaps 30% is the best that can be done because of other factors within the unicorn industry. Okay. So there needs to be an awful lot more work done there, and I think you saw through Anne-Marie's presentation that there's real efforts to move forward with doing a much better job getting more information about establishing these benchmarks. Amory's presentation really dealt with the on-farm comparative analysis in terms of specific welfare issues with feedback to producers. The feedback to producers providing information about how they compare to their peers is extremely important. So I have up there listed a few projects, and Amory mentioned most of those. So I'm not going to go into those details. But what I will say is that this is something that's really recognized within the benchmarking literature. In another book, 1994, about benchmarking, they said this feedback to producers, this initial baseline and providing this learning opportunity, giving information back to producers, works extremely well in creating motivation to change. Producers do not want to be ranked lower than others. Businesses don't want to be benchmarked lower than their competitors. It can provide a vision for what an organization can look like or what a farm can look like. If you know that the majority of farms in your area are actually at percent 5, 10, and you're not, it can help you think about how to get there. Can help you identify by identifying how those things are accomplished. It can move you forward. Data, evidence, success stories for inspiring change occurs. You can identify best practices for how to manage change, and again, you create that yardstick to measure how you're doing against where you were. Benchmarking is first and foremost, according to this definition, a learning process. And I like what Catherine said yesterday, that codes were developed to be learning tools, educational tools to a large extent, or assessments are designed to help do that. Learning process structure so as to enable those engaged to compare their performance, identify strengths or weaknesses in self and create self-improvement. And the learning process is really key. Finally, we have animal welfare and benchmarking for assessments and audits. Basically, the assessments for meeting certain standards, for obtaining certain certifications, what have you. And the different programs or schemes, as they're called in Europe, have different goals. Fraser in 2006 in a paper outlined those types of standards that are created, standards for regulation, standards for intergovernment agreements, quality assurance programs, non-mandatory codes and practices, and product differentiation and labeling programs. The whole list of different reasons standards are developed and used. Many of those require some sort of assessment or some sort of audit in order to demonstrate that you have carried out and met the program. Assessments and audits are not designed necessarily to be the same things as benchmarks or even baselines. Right? In the world of auditing, the auditor is supposed to come in, walk through the procedure with his audit form in hand, score your procedure, and give that information back to management. The interaction, the opportunity for education in a strict auditing system is not really encouraged because you end up in a system where you may be the auditor may be influenced by the interaction. So that becomes a real different issue, but it depends on how, it doesn't mean that they can't be used that way. It all depends on how you set up the system you want to put in place. What does the management do with that information? An example of a system that when I was in the U.S., I worked with, and I still work with the National Pork Board in the U.S. with their PQA Plus program. In the PQA Plus program, the system was set up so that as part of the PQA Plus certification, there has to be an on-farm evaluation, an on-farm assessment. A trained person goes out to the farm, does the assessment, sits down with the producer, goes over the assessment, comes up with a plan on how to address any concerns that there may be. Then that farm is actually given a site ID. The results and plan that have been developed are then stored. I'm not sure whether it's inside National Pork Board or outside an independent organization. Once that farm has been assessed and the site has been given its identification, it goes into a pool from which there can be a random draw for a third-party assessment. The third-party assessor would then go out, visit the farm again, go over, has the action plan been carried out? Has anything been addressed? And then those results are then provided back. Okay. So this just shows you, this is just really to remind you, to tell you the story about that PQA Plus program and how, because you have the assessment, but it's not simply an assessment, it's an opportunity for education where the individual interacts with the producer and not just pass or fail, but there's a plan developed to address issues. That's how using an assessment actually ends up being much more like benchmarking, because when there's that random audit that occurs and compare where they were to what they've done in the meantime. That third-party verification, again, is really key. Okay. There's a lot of steps that need to be gone through before you get to third-party assessments. I really think that most organizations I talk to, I really recommend that they develop a culture of internal assessments before they move on to third-party assessments, rather than it being something imposed from outside and being a kind of a policing of an organization. If you work with internal assessments, you're actually developing a culture within your own organizations about animal welfare assessments and the importance of that to the company. The Pork Board also likes to make it very clear that being involved with things like animal welfare assessments and these third-party audits really isn't to talk about compliance to the system, but it's more for them to evaluate how well their system is working in terms of how well their outreach material is working, how well their assessment program is working. Is anything being done as a result of their efforts? So why benchmark? Well, Temple Grandin has a couple famous quotes she often says, people manage the things that they measure. And measurement also provides a benchmark for which you can compare your performance. If you don't measure what's happening, you don't know where the problems are. Right? Why benchmark? Identify on-farm concerns that should be fixed. You can't address issues if you do not know they exist. So sitting around the National Pork Board in the U.S. at the Animal Welfare Committee talking about the results from PQA Plus program assessments, speaking with the farmers that are on that committee, they're saying, you know what? I never knew that on my farm we did this, X. I thought I addressed that issue 10 years ago, but it was still going on. People change in terms of the help they get. People fall back into bad habits. Sometimes management doesn't know what's actually happening back in their own buildings. So sometimes they're even surprised as to how they've done on some of these assessments. They can then go about trying to fix those issues. We've heard about demonstrate and instill trust with consumers and retailers, or those interested parties. You heard yesterday, and I think it's actually the title of maybe David Smith's talk, but I say it all the time, it's not a show-me world. It's not a tell-me world anymore. It's a show-me world. Okay? That's the message. The message is you need to figure out how to demonstrate. Okay? And it's not that people don't trust you. People want to trust you. But people don't trust anything without documentation anymore. And I think there is an overwhelming amount of trust for the agriculture industries, but it's going to disappear unless programs are put in place where you can actually demonstrate that you're doing the right thing. We've heard about protecting access to international markets and to assess industry performance on animal welfare issues. Why benchmark? It's to provide essential data, and the data can be used in a lot of different ways. I'll show you an example of that from Scotland here shortly. You can also benchmark to look at the effectiveness of outreach programs. People are benchmarking or taking baselines now around attitudes on the perspectives of animal welfare, and that includes attitudes of producers to animal welfare issues. I've seen one study on benchmarking within the poultry chain, but it's much more a production business-oriented paper rather than an animal welfare-oriented paper. There's a paper by Clive Phillips out of Australia who looked at attitudes of people involved with the beef industry. And it's really interesting because just that type of survey information demonstrates the variety of opinions, even within an individual type of commodity group or production-oriented industry. And it was really interesting. It was a case where, you know, people within the beef industry, within the beef chain, many of them shared the same types of values about certain things regarding animal welfare. But they were also surprisingly different in certain areas. You know, we often talk about animal welfare, and we talk about attitudes, and we talk about us and them. Right? But even within our own groups, you'll find incredible differences in terms of what is important or what is of higher value in terms of animal welfare. And finally, one of the more important ones is to assess and demonstrate continuous improvement. I'm going to go into that in more detail. So in terms of how to use the data, Scotland has its own animal welfare monitoring and benchmarking system. They use it to look at health and welfare issues, to help farmers and flocks reach their potential and propose solutions to how to do that. Benchmark health and welfare on a farm against similar farms. Monitor progress in improving health and welfare. So it's kind of a countrywide health monitoring, animal welfare monitoring system. They can use that data collected to feedback and start to be ahead of the game in terms of preventing outbreaks, seeing where there might be potential solutions. If you don't have the data, you're in a catch-up mode. Right? You're always responding to whatever the crisis is rather than being able to look at the data and say, this might be coming down the road at us, maybe we need to look at this. Beef Quality Assurance Program in the United States has a number of books and information available on how to carry out benchmarks on feedlots and cow-calf operations. Many of those are really production-oriented, more so than what you might call animal care or animal welfare, but they're an excellent first step along the path in terms of identifying what type of management issues are being experienced. You have groups that are looking at benchmarking, creating baselines for stock people. So Graham Combe in Australia is looking at how stock people themselves carry out certain practices rather than are certain things provided, how the animals are doing. Graham would argue that without looking at how people are working with animals on the farm, we're really missing a huge component of what's involved with proper animal care and animal welfare. Benchmarking that concentrates on emphasizing the learning element in benchmarking as a lever for learning can support the development of a culture of continuous improvement. If you emphasize learning, there's an opportunity to work towards continuous improvement. If all it is a score and there's no feedback, there's no direction, there's no reason to change, then you've really missed the opportunity to use this as a demonstration of continuous improvement. And continuous improvement is really something you hear about all the time when you talk to companies and organizations about why they're establishing codes, what they're doing with their assessments, and what they're doing with their audits. For example, McDonald's has, you know, in their work, they have we are committed to continuous improvement of the welfare of animals in our supply chain. That's one of their key messages when it comes to their animal welfare program. And they have data on their website demonstrating, you know, things like how they've improved from the number of abattoirs they're actually auditing, you know, how many animals or how many abattoirs are passing, a way to demonstrate that this is where we were, this is what we're doing, and how we're getting better. Same thing's true, there's data from Temple Grandin's work in terms of the auditing and how different abattoirs in terms of the beef plants within the system have changed over the first few years of audits being introduced. And so it's very easy then to be able to say, we're involved with continuous improvement. This is where we were. This is where we're going. And we have the data to demonstrate it. Okay. It gives you some credibility. Same thing here in terms of the comparison of vocalization scores. Again, the message here is simply, if you measure it, you can demonstrate the continuous improvement. You can show how you're making things better. It's not just that plants are passing, but that there is actual specific measures that you can actually be looking at. There's a company called Unilever. Does anybody know this company, Unilever? I thought maybe you might. Okay. There's a number of brands up there that they're responsible for. They have a sustainable agricultural code that they've just come out with. Within that sustainable agricultural code, they have a section on animal welfare, among a number of other things. All this information is available on their website. I know you can't probably read that because I can't read that from here, but the point here is that they have a number of different areas dealing within animal welfare, one dealing with continuous improvement, you know, talking about why it's important, talking about what should be measured and shouldn't be measured. And really, they speak about the continuous improvement section is extremely important. Okay. They are very much committed to continuous improvement. They believe that suppliers should raise awareness and have knowledgeable opportunities for monitoring improved animal welfare to stimulate farmers to start. Maybe that's my next slide. So the Unilever will act as a benchmark and will only ask for changes in areas where the standard in place or code are significantly different. The code is applicable to all Unilever suppliers or agricultural goods, farmers producing them, contractors working on them. They hold the suppliers responsible. However, many good practices must be applied by farmers, not suppliers. It comes back down to the farmers. Unilever suggesting farmers need to be benchmarking animal welfare. They don't know how to measure it. When it comes to measuring those continuous improvement, it says to be developed. And I suspect they'd rather have the industry develop it than have to develop it themselves. Okay. So suppliers should raise awareness and share knowledge, should stimulate farmers to start benchmarking. Overall continuous improvement is crucial, in their opinion, for sustainable development. Specific improvements in animal welfare are based on awareness of and solutions to the issues that are present. Again, monitoring and benchmarking systems should be developed to support continuous improvement of animal welfare. An example of monitoring scheme, the Cow Compass, can be seen, They even provide examples for companies and organizations that are interested in what it is they're doing. However, again, the ultimate responsibility for which practices are implemented and how resides with suppliers and their farmers. So in conclusion, I think that baseline and benchmarking animal welfare are important for sustainability of agriculture. I think it's becoming more and more expected that it's going to be the case. Show me the program, show me the data, show me what you've done. But you know what? It really is part of the tradition of agriculture. And it's not unusual. It's kind of disappeared here recently, but in the recent past, the extension agents going out working with producers, going through their farms, the veterinarians going out working through the health programs. It's a way of actually carrying out benchmarking and addressing animal welfare issues. It allows producers to manage what you measure and also allows the producers to take credit for the good things they do. More often than not, when I've seen producers use animal welfare assessment programs, it's, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Gee, I did better than I thought I was going to be. Oh, I only have to fix this one or two little things and I'm good? Oh, there's nothing to change? Well, surprise, surprise. You take care of the animals, they take care of you. There's not a huge number of changes often involved. It's about demonstrating. It's about collecting the data for the good things that are being done already. Thank you very much for your attention. I have time for one question.
Thank you. David Trost, Agriculture Canada. I have a question about who you would be targeting for the benchmarking. Now, my question is this. So you go back to your first comment when you mentioned Robin Harrell's reference to the fact that farmers themselves are doing a good job and they want to be able to demonstrate it too. But farmers can take ownership when they are the owners, but many have employees. Some of the failures that we've seen that end up getting onto YouTube and that are not nice and we get a flood of letters into the minister and we have to address often relate to employees. that may not have the same sense of ownership. And how does benchmarking apply differently to how owners, farmers may use it versus employees?
Yeah, I guess my immediate response is I don't see a huge difference. I think what we're talking about is the type of program that's developed and how it's implemented. There are a number of private companies that have their own animal welfare assessment programs in place. As part of that animal welfare assessment program, a key component here is training. So you can think about slaughter plants, for example, and having animal welfare assessment programs in place for AMI, for the McDonald's, Wendy's, what have you. They will all have their own individual training programs and hold their workers responsible. I've worked with a company called Maple Leaf Ducks in Indiana, the largest duck producer in the United States, and it's very clear. It's written into the contracts. If you do not follow what these guidelines are, you can have your contract dismissed. Don't expect ducks next time or until you address this issue. Oh, and by the way, we are going to provide you with the training on how to do this. So I think that rather than dividing it in terms of ownership and workers, I think we have to look at it as something that works within the whole, within the whole chain. And everybody has to have responsibility, and those responsibilities and actions that are taken are going to be different. But we need to make sure that the expectations are clear and there's training available, that type of thing. Does that semi-answer your question? Semi. Right, and so one of the examples that comes to mind is something that Cargill's doing with video auditing. So video auditing is being done at a number of their different plants, and what they can do is then they can compare, they can do their measures, they can see what's going on, how many problems have occurred that day at that plant. They can compare it from plant A to plant B, but they also compare it within plants. And one of the really cool stories is that, you know, if you're working at something like the slaughter plant, if you're in the night shift, that's usually where the new employees go, right? And the day shift, the more experienced employees get to work on the day shift. Well, what they did is they carried out their animal welfare assessments and carried out the video audits and showed that the new employees were scoring much better than the more senior employees on the day shift. And they made that known in the plant. And suddenly over time what happened is that the day shift employees, who thought they knew everything because they'd been there longer and what have you, actually improved, and it was kind of a competition within the organization itself. There's another example of how providing information back to the workers in terms of how they're doing actually provides that motivation to do better. Okay. So data can be a really good thing, a real powerful motivator as well that way. I wonder why. So the project, well, one of the projects that I'm working on involved, Anne-Marie mentioned in terms of benchmarking. We're doing a project looking at benchmarking dairy producers in terms of their compliance with the dairy welfare codes, and that's their attitudes toward those codes. And Ron talked about that project a little bit yesterday. I just we're just kind of really starting another project. I'm going to go back. I should have my cowboy hat on. Where's Dave? But go back, because we've just initiated a project on animal welfare at the Calgary Stampede. And one of the amazing things, and I've just started talking about this program, is they have developed over the last 2 years codes of practice for animals on their facilities. They develop codes of practice for animals at the ranch. They develop codes of practice for animals used, that animals are on their facilities during in the agricultural displays. Okay. Not only have they developed codes, they've actually moved forward and have carried out third-party audits against those codes to see how well they're doing. And it is amazing how that information is so positive and so powerful, because you have this third-party assessment going, you know what, people are doing the right thing. here's the evidence. It's no longer just tell me, but it's show me. Thank you all very much.